You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Vikings. I am your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. The show is on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. You can find the show anywhere you find your favorite podcasts, like Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Himalaya, whatever you like, or you can ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. And today we have a little bit more information on the topic that was the biggest chunk of the show yesterday, and basically what NFL teams are doing to make training camp possible during COVID-19. And there was a lot of kind of uproar yesterday, or on yesterday's show and over the weekend, from players saying, you know, hey, we want to play, but there's all these questions that we don't have. And well, there was some movement on Monday that now we can recap. One of the big things that happened the night before yesterday's episode came out, so I didn't get a chance to get at it when I was recording, was a piece from Peter King in his triumphant return, talking about his tour of TCO Performance Center in Eagan and the things that Eric Sugarman and the Vikings, the precautions that they've been taking and how things are going to look different inside an NFL training camp. And later the Vikings released a video with a lot of the same information in it. The NFL also reportedly has offered the NFLPA to completely cancel the preseason, the remaining two games. They've already canceled two. They might go down to one still, maybe, but all in all likelihood, they will be canceling all of the preseason games because of COVID-19. They've implemented testing regimens and all sorts of other precautions, which we will go over and more. And I also want to talk to you about a couple more stories for one of the biggest free agency moves the Vikings made, as well as a draft pick from last year. So we are going to get into all of that. So let's start off with the COVID stuff. So the main dump of information comes from the Peter King piece and the accompanying Vikings like tour video. I'll link them both in the show notes so you can watch or read as you like. But some of the stuff that I found interesting in it is like one of the big resolutions that the NFL is enforcing on all the teams is testing. So the way that training camp is going to ramp up, at least to start, is that everybody is going to come on their first day. They're going to show up to the facility. They're going to get tested for COVID-19, and then they can't come back for three more days. If that test is negative, the test is positive, they got to quarantine and do all that. But if that test is negative, then they can come back on day four and get tested again. And then if that is negative, they can actually report and begin working on day five. So that's going to be like the first starting for players, and then what are called like tier one and two employees, which is basically like staff, coaches, people that need to be in the facility every day and are deemed like essential enough to be there. And there's a lot of paring down that had to happen in terms of, you know, janitors and other like non-essential people, media people. Of course, there's not going to be much media there, so it will be a very like pared down environment at TCO Performance Center, and we'll see if all 90 people actually make it to camp, because with no preseason, the team might actually just cut some of the less likely to make the team players. That would break my heart, of course, but you could definitely see them going in with 70 or 80, which has also kind of been rumored to be something that people are discussing. Some other interesting tidbits, though, you can, you know, go watch the video or read the article for more of the details. But some of the stuff I found interesting, they're going to like rip out a whole bunch of seats from the big gathering room where they would usually have entire team meetings. They are going to spread out lockers. They're going to have people, they're going to spread out like weight training and have some of the weight training actually happen like outside and on the field and kind of spread everything out. And essentially the whole thing is Eric Sugarman walking Peter King through the facility and explaining to him all the different things they've put in place to make sure that nobody is within 6 feet of each other, and you can't even get in the facility without a mask and a fever check, and the fever check won't work if you aren't wearing a mask. So it seems like a lot of the precautions put into place seem like pretty comprehensive, but they also acknowledge that that's not going to prevent somebody from getting COVID-19. It's going to happen. Somebody is going to get it, and they are kind of at peace with that, which is, I guess, a little crazy when you kind of stop to think about it. But I think everybody involved has kind of said, yeah, we are going to be at some risk and somebody is going to get it. We can minimize that as much as possible, but we also have to have a plan in place for what happens when somebody gets it. The Vikings happen to have turned their recovery room into a place where they can actually treat the disease and kind of quarantine people away and, you know, keep them kind of isolated from the rest. And really interestingly to me, at least, they have contact tracers that are going to basically track the position of everybody from players to coaches to like building staff and track who was in close proximity to who. So like one of my big worries was, okay, somebody gets it and they test positive and you kick them out of the facility and they go quarantine, right? But they were asymptomatic for how long? They were getting in huddles with people, they were tackling people, you know, they were talking to people. How do you know who they did and didn't come in contact with? And these contact tracers seem to kind of be the answer to that. So I'm very interested in how that like would work in the event that somebody on the team or in the building does test positive for COVID-19. Again, in the show notes, a bunch of really cool stuff, but in terms of like the more league-wide stuff, so basically like the way that Ian Rappaport worded it was the league offered the union zero preseason games. So the negotiation is not finalized, but the union, the NFLPA, were the ones that wanted zero preseason games. So the NFL offering that essentially means that it's going to happen and it's going to be part of a larger agreement that isn't done yet. So obviously, and I kind of talked about it yesterday and when the first two preseason games were cut, and it's just like to a greater degree, but this is pretty devastating for guys like Braylon Addison, guys like David Moa, guys like trying to make the team, right? Or even guys that were on the practice squad last year, like somebody we're going to talk about today, Cameron Smith. The preseason is kind of where careers take off. And one of the stories I'm going to tell today in Michael Pierce kind of has that. If it weren't for the preseason, Michael Pierce might not even have an NFL career. So it's really devastating to a lot of undrafted free agents who might have actually found themselves, you know, carving out a career in the NFL. And while that's probably worth it because, you know, risk of COVID-19, you know, and minimizing that is probably more important than this, it's still worth, you know, sparing a thought for guys who worked their whole, like, childhood and their whole life up to this point, only to have a pandemic come in and kind of knock them out. And by the time they come back, there'll be a whole new draft class that everybody's way more excited about. A big win for the NFLPA that they are very happy with, and they even tweeted out a statement basically taking a victory lap on this one, is pushing for daily testing. And there will be daily testing for, I think, the first 2 weeks of training camp. And if the positivity rate is lower than 5%, then they'll go to every other. And the NFLPA is touting this as a pretty big win. And I think that that makes sense. Daily testing was a huge thing for them. And it sounds like more or less they got it, unless it turns out that they don't need it as much. And then they'll, you know, scale it back, which seems reasonable. If you are a season ticket holder, you may have noticed a whole bunch of events being canceled. That probably means that the Vikings won't have fans in the stands. That hasn't been officially announced, but it sure looks like that. People are like posting their screenshots of all the notifications they got of like games being canceled. So if you are a season ticket holder, or if you had bought a ticket, you can either apply to a full refund, or I think you can get like a credit toward future games or something. I am a little bit fuzzy on exactly how that works, so I'll just link in the show notes the statement that the Vikings have made about that kind of thing, and you can do the research yourself, but do be advised. There also has been an opt-out for any player as part of the larger negotiation that hasn't been finalized yet, but it is on the table. So you might see players who have a loved one who is immunocompromised or maybe immunocompromised themselves, maybe not like sit out the 2020 season. It'll be really interesting to see what names actually make that declaration and what happens to their contracts, what happens to the contract of all of the players in the event of a truncated season. And it seems like the only impasse left is the quote-unquote economics of it. And the money stuff. Who gets paid? You know, what happens to the salary cap? Who needs to basically take the hit of revenue that's going to happen because you can't sell tickets and you can't do all these things, and advertising revenue is probably going to go down a lot. And that's the thing that's probably going to be a bigger impasse, but it also sounds like training camp isn't going to hang in the balance of that decision, and that's something that they can kind of negotiate over more time and cross that bridge when they're a little bit closer to it. In terms of training camp, it seems like it's going off. And if there's no preseason, that probably means that there's going to be a week one unless things change drastically between now and the start of September, which could absolutely happen. But overall, signs for optimism. So coming up next, we are going to talk about a couple of the players who I haven't gotten to yet. We're actually getting down to it. We're only down to a handful left. So stick around for a couple of stories I'm actually pretty excited about. About an hour or two outside of Santa Barbara, or like more like 3 or 4 hours kind of north of LA, northwestish of LA, There is a little winery called Melville Winery, and it's where future Viking linebacker Cameron Smith would spend his springs and summers in between seasons at USC. This kind of became a secondary identity for him, but I actually want to back way up to tell you a little bit about how he got to USC and into the science of winemaking, and of course his journey to ultimately the Vikings. He was one of those kids that was born like 11 pounds, like one of those absolutely huge kids, and he was always, always, always huge. When he was in fourth grade, he played football with eighth graders. When he first went out for the team freshman year of high school, his coach had to ID him because he didn't believe that that kid was 14. He was just absolutely massive. And naturally, he was pretty exciting in high school, and so he had some pretty good recruiting. He ends up getting an invite to a USC recruiting event called Elite Junior Day, and he totally falls in love with USC and the campus, and he commits right then and there. And while he's playing at USC, his girlfriend works for Tito's Vodka, which turned into an interest into, like, the production process of vodka and the actual, like, chemistry and science of it. Anybody who talks to Cameron Smith says that he, like, kind of gets really intense and he'll talk your ear off about stuff, and he, like, seemed like kind of a dork about all this in the most fun way, and he definitely applies that, like, desire to learn, that like super like almost academic approach to football as well, and it makes him a pretty good like QB of the defense type linebacker for USC. So that interest in vodka turns into an interest in like beer brewing and distilling, and then eventually an interest in wine, and that's where he ends up at Melville Winery working like a summer job, like working the vineyard. And he really falls in love with the patient approach you have to take with wine. You really have to take your time with it and really, you know, it's not something that you can rush, right? You have to wait for the grapes to ferment for a very specific amount of time. And you know, too long, too short, it can change the flavor. You know, you have to really take your time in and put a lot of care and a lot of precision into the amount of sugar you put in, into the chemistry of it. And, you know, he actually really likes the farming of it, and that's the job he ends up doing, and he really falls in love with the tender love and care that has to go in to raising the right kind of grapes and having them come off the vine just right, and he really applies that patience to football. And it, I think, makes him, by the time he's like an upperclassman at USC, it makes him like one of those vocal leader of the defense types. Somebody that can really look at a game plan, look at an opponent, look at a scouting report, and really kind of take the right approach, the really precise, okay, this is exactly where I'm supposed to be and how I'm supposed to approach a play or a strategy or a particular tendency. And it makes him somebody who is, while his athleticism left a lot to be desired, it makes him somebody that was really into like really excelled at the mental side of the game. And that's what he really touts, is he's like a smart guy linebacker. So after his second to last year at USC, he goes to one of the panels, the draft panels, that tells you where you are projected to get taken. So you can make a better informed decision about whether or not you're going to go out for the draft now or if you're going to return to USC for his senior season. And he gets a fifth round grade from them, and he kind of takes that personally. He like takes it to heart, and he's like, no, I'm going to go back to USC for one more season. I can absolutely beat that. I can absolutely do better than that. And he also kind of says, like, listen, yeah, I know that, like, sometimes I look slow on tape, sometimes I look like, you know, I don't quite have the athletic traits that you're going to want from somebody in the draft, you know, somebody like an Anthony Barr is always the guy I think of, but, you know, somebody like a Tremaine Edmonds or whatever. But I know that when I get into the interview rooms, I can really impress them with, like, my whiteboard skills, and I can draw things up, and I'll be able to kind of show them that I have a handle on the game that most other players don't have. So he goes back to his senior season to try to put some better tape out, but obviously, you know, that, and then the combine goes down, and he does impress the Vikings, but he doesn't end up beating that fifth round grade. He gets selected in the fifth round of the NFL draft, and he's part of a draft class of 12 players, and of those 12 players, 10 of them make the 53-man roster after the preseason. The linebacker group is a little bit more difficult to crack. It's a pretty crowded group. They've got, obviously, the starting positions were completely handled. They already had Gedeon and Eric Wilson. Those guys weren't going anywhere. So that only left like one or two spots for him to compete over, and he doesn't make it. But he does get to the practice squad, and after Ben Gedion deals with some concussion issues, he's actually on the active roster by like, I think week six or seven. And then he kind of bounces back off the roster and then back on it again when more concussion issues show up and more injuries show up, and Kentrell Brothers ends up getting hurt as well. So he ends up cracking the roster and signing a futures deal. So now he's approaching 2020, obviously with no training camp in preseason. This changes like so many of these segments from the last like 2 months too, that are all like, we'll see what he can do in the preseason, and now he can't, which really stinks. But for him, making the team might have opened up because the Vikings didn't keep Kentrell Brothers, and that was somebody that was in his way. So even though you still have Eric Wilson and Gedion and Kendricks and Barr taking up those first four spots, and there's only like one or two linebacker spots after that, one of the people in those spots did go away. Now, you also now have Troy Dye to contend with, so it's not going to be easy by any means, and you probably have to prove that, you know, you belong on the roster as like a sixth linebacker, as a special teamer, and be better that way, which is going to be all that much harder with no preseason. So ultimately, I think the push that comes to shove here is that the mental side of the game, I don't think shows up as much in like practices. That's something that really makes you a gamer, right? Because you're not trying to read plays. Half the time in drills, you know what the play call is going to be anyways. So it's going to be difficult for him to prove like what we're going to have to see. And if he makes the team, this is the thing that was proven, is yes, his athleticism will make him a rosterable linebacker. Is his athleticism rosterable for a linebacker is kind of the question surrounding Cameron Smith right now. And he can't rely on making the right read and getting in the right place, which he can in a game. So it kind of is a poor simulation, but that's really going to be what it comes down to without a preseason. Coming up next is Michael Pierce. So stick around. Like a lot of players, Michael Pierce grew up in a very football family. His dad, Michael Pierce Sr., was a pretty good running back for Tulane. He grew up in the Alabama area, where, of course, football is a huge part of like Southern culture. So he ended up going to Tulane to like follow in his dad's footsteps. Now, he was a little too big to be a running back, so he played defense. But unfortunately, he never got his grades together. And he reflects on it now, like if he's asked about it, he'll reflect on it as just like a kind of a thing of maturity and not really being able to kind of get it together enough to like be academically eligible. And at the time, what it means is he actually has to transfer to a smaller school. So he ends up going to Samford, and there things are pretty quiet for a nose tackle. I mean, that is not a glamorous position, and it's actually kind of hard to find press on Michael Pierce, even when he's like having his best days for the Ravens, because he's not the flashy guy, right? He's just the big dude clogging up the middle, and a lot of that's dirty work, and it's no different at Samford. All you really get in terms of like claims to fame there is a couple of videos of him lifting just absolutely absurd numbers. He's like squatting, or I think he clean lifts 405 and he squats 725 or something like that. I could have totally said that wrong. I don't know anything about weightlifting, but either way, he's putting out absolutely absurd numbers. And he does play pretty well at Samford. And he ends up getting a small school, undrafted free agent kind of trajectory with the Baltimore Ravens. And the Ravens at the time have a couple of nose tackles in front of him. They have Carl Davis and a pretty full room of defensive tackles. It's the situation a lot of current undrafted players are looking at with the Vikings, where like, yeah, the roster is kind of set with like, these are the players, and you're going to have to really like, somebody's either going to have to get hurt or you're going to have to be a complete revelation in the preseason to get the spot. And of course, it's going to be harder now. But for Michael Pierce, he ended up kind of getting a confluence of both factors. So Carl Davis suffered an ankle injury. He would end up on injured reserve, and that would open up a spot not only as a defensive tackle on the roster, but eventually he actually gets to start here. But he also has this really pivotal moment, and it's really funny. This is one of the articles that I found, when probably the one that I'm going to link. The one of the ones that I found was about how his like career really takes off at this moment in the Superdome in a preseason game against the Saints. He ends up getting a really crazy strip sack that he ends up recovering himself for a touchdown in the preseason. It's this really explosive, splashy play, and that, combined with the injury, cements his spot on the Ravens roster. And after not too long, he ends up going from a rotational guy to actually being the starter there. And then things are actually pretty quiet for most of his time in Baltimore. Again, he is kind of an under-the-radar position. He's just a big dude clogging up the middle, and he does that well enough where most of the headlines surrounding the Ravens from, 2016, 17, 18, 19 are about, like, Joe Flacco and stuff on the defense, talkers about John Harbaugh and stuff. So there's not a lot of, like, press, good or bad, around Michael Pierce. He's just, like, solidly doing his job. And if you wanted to, like, talk more evaluatively, which is not really what this segment is about, he does a pretty good job there. But really, the next time that he makes, like, major headlines is in 2019 training camp, where he shows up so out of shape that John Harbaugh yanks him off the field. And there's a lot of different theories for what goes on here. If you ask Michael Pierce about it, he'll tell you that he made poor conditioning decisions. He was trying to use a little bit of leverage for contract negotiations, so he sat out some optional stuff, and when he was doing his own workouts in place of that, he focused too much on weightlifting and not enough on cardio, so he put on a bunch of pounds. If you ask a random Ravens fan about it, they might say, well, he didn't go to the workouts and he got lazy and he put on a bunch of weight. But either way, I mean, you could see the pictures of him popping out of his jersey and clearly not, like, doing well enough in the conditioning, and so John Harbaugh says, all right, you're out. You come back when you're in shape. And so he, fixes whatever was wrong with his conditioning regimen, is what I'll say. And he comes back, and by, like, halfway through that training camp, he's totally back. He passes his physical, and he's fine. But the 2019 season is kind of a regression for him, and he ends up actually suffering an ankle injury that sort of derails his season, which may or may not have to do with having a bunch of extra weight that ankle has to hold up. But either way, I mean, conspiracy theories aside, he suffers an injury, it doesn't work out, and that was a contract year for him. So the timing is really, really unfortunate. If he had another good season, I mean, in 2018, I think he was one of the best nose tackles in the league, maybe 2017, maybe a little bit of both. He was one of the best noses in the league. And so having that kind of sequence of events is really unfortunate going into the contract year. So he ends up hitting free agency. Of course, now the Vikings sign him, and he's kind of got a chance for a fresh start in purple. But the fresh start isn't as, like, sorely needed as somebody who was, like, in a bunch of trouble and went to JUCO or whatever. It's more that he gets to kind of wash the bitter taste of 2019 out of his mouth and try to recoup 2017-2018 form. But really, this far into the story, he's already kind of shed his undrafted small school guy reputation, and now he's just a guy that was one of, like, he's now, like, his past is as one of the best defensive linemen in the league. And even if, his career completely spirals out of control, which would be unlikely, but even in, like, that worst case scenario, he's pretty much shed the small school guy that's overcome something, like, moniker. And that's pretty cool. Like, that's a pretty neat accomplishment, especially for a guy that plays a relatively unsung position. The nice thing is that now he doesn't really have a lot of competition for the starting role. I guess technically you would say that, like, well, maybe they would start Shamar Stephen if Michael Pierce is actually total trash, or maybe Armin Watts, who they've played at nose tackle a lot, or somebody like Jaleel Johnson, and maybe they're all, like, in a quote-unquote, like, formal competition. But in reality, I mean, Michael Pierce signed a big old free agent deal, and he's gonna be the starter, and he gets a chance to play next to Danielle Hunter and whatever happens over at 3-Tech, and play for Andre Patterson. That's pretty good for him. So that is going to do it for this episode of Locked On Vikings. I will see you all tomorrow, unless there's some major news. We talk about the backup quarterback, so get excited for some Sean Mannion discussion, as well as Jake Browning, and we've already talked about Nate Stanley's story, but we'll talk about his, like, prospects in terms of making the team. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL, the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. You can find the show anywhere you find your favorite podcasts, or you can ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. I'll see y'all tomorrow, and as always, Skol.